The views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
Revolution comes with a price tag. You a slave to a flag in a country that clearly doesn't love you when they probably never have. Told you turn the other cheek, and they made it with a bat. Fucking protesting them citizens. Told you go fight in the war. Vietnam, you died, good riddance. The man of the house rule took you from your siblings. Turned around a pump crack right up in your city, and they turned all your leaders to martyrs. You was off in the war, now who was guarding your daughters? It was riots in the streets, killed Malcolm and Martin. Called the National Guard up because we ride with our guard up, and now it's blood in your guard. It's like an amendment, don't apply. To you, everything that they taught you was a lie to you. See, they scared of your skin and they dying to shoot. Take the American dream and then you die to pursue.
One day it'll all make sense. We said that about power, then it don't make sense. But none of that money matters when you live in madness. The one that you figure out that all you got is this. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger.
For those of you who don't know the pain.
Good afternoon. You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines known as USA Inc. Today's date is January 8th, 2016. It is a Friday afternoon. A particularly okay day here in North Carolina in terms of the weather. I know a lot of places throughout the United States is experiencing some cold weather as well as some inclement weather, like hurricanes and tornadoes and things of that sort. And so just glad and hoping, well, I should say hoping that my voice finds you relatively safe and relatively sound behind these enemy lines. We do have a guest scheduled to join us today. Coming up at in just about 8 minutes, we will be speaking with one of the founding members of 1 Million Conscious Black Voters and Contributors. That will be Mr. James Klingman. Mr. Klingman is the nation's most prolific writer on economic empowerment for black people. His weekly syndicated newspaper column, Blackonomics, is featured in hundreds of newspapers, magazines, and newsletters. He has written seven books, five of which are on economic empowerment, and has been the featured speaker for numerous organizations, schools, churches, and events across the United States. You could check out his personal website at blackonomics.com. That's blackonomics.com. Now, we will be speaking to him because of the, I don't know how to call it except for perhaps a social, political collective of conscious black people who are coming together to leverage their collective economic power as well as building their collective political power here in the United States. Now, the group does list 18 planks for its social political platform, and they recently added an 18th plank, which calls for the removal of the slavery exception clause of the 13th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. A lot of people still don't realize, but we're reaching people. Last night, myself and Johanna, a new abolitionist, co-host, co-producer of New Abolitionist Radio, we were testing Blab for him to be able to host an abolitionist meeting on that platform, which is a video chat platform, and we had a whole bunch of people join in last night, and a couple of people chimed in and asked us questions, and they came to the realization that slavery was never in fact abolished in the United States. And so it was with great excitement when I heard the news that 1 million conscious black voters and contributors were going to add the removal of the exception clause of the 13th Amendment that allows for legalized slavery in human trafficking. So we're excited to talk to Mr. Klingman about that today. Again, he is one of the founding members of 1 Million Conscious Black Voters and Contributors. In the news, here's some news. Hopefully we'll have time to get to these news. If I'm only able to share a little bit of information, I have linked to those stories so you can read them at your leisure. But researchers are pointing to the latest batch of emails from Hillary Clinton's private, unsecure server that she used to conduct official Secretary of State business on. And these researchers are saying some of the emails prove some of the stuff that you've been hearing on Black Talk Radio Network in relation to the United States government, particularly the Obama administration, overthrowing an ally in Libya, overthrowing that North African nation by way of using Islamic proxies to murder Libyan Prime Minister Al-Gaddafi, because he was pushing a unified gold-backed currency for all of Africa. You heard of the euro, right? You know, European nations coming together to create, you know, a unified currency that could be used all over, you know, Europe and by the member citizens of the member countries of the European Union. Well, Gaddafi, who was a pan-Africanist, was proposing something similar for all of Africa. But unlike the United States with their Federal Reserve notes, their promissory notes that aren't backed by any precious metals whatsoever, you know, he was proposing that Africa come up with a currency that's backed by gold. And we know a lot of gold deposits as well as other precious metals are found in Africa. All right. And so this would immediately give the continent of Africa and all the member countries of the African Union, it would give them leverage over all the other world currencies because theirs will be backed by gold. And that is one of the reasons, and probably the primary reason, that they went in and overthrew Libya and Hillary Clinton herself. We got the video. A lot of people want to ignore it. It's not coming up in the debates. You can't depend on corporate / state media to tell you the truth about these things because they were helping the Obama administration promote lies about what was going on in Libya when you had all those Islamists try to rise up like they part of the Arab Spring and all of that. And, you know, Hillary Clinton, Susan Rice, all members of the Obama administration promoted all kind of lies. And Foreign Policy Journal published an article about all the lies promoted by the administration to justify to you, the American public, why we got to go in here and overthrow yet another country and murder its leader. So that's starting to come out. That was in the latest batch of about 3,000 emails that were released by the State Department in complying with an order by a judge. Here is some new, updated news. This is some recent news concerning the killing of Eric Garner by NYPD police officers. We all saw that video too, saw him get choked out on the pavement. Well, a black NYPD sergeant, a black woman who supervised that arrest, okay, that resulted in the murder of Eric Garner, has been charged by the department. Now, I'm still trying to get the details on this because it's not clear to me how the NYPD department can bring charges against members of the New York Police Department. But the prosecutor does. So I'm still trying to get the details on this. And there is an ongoing NYPD investigation as well as a parallel Justice Department investigation. And it's been how long? Over a year. And no one has yet to be charged with anything in the case by the Justice Department. But the NYPD, it appears that they will be issuing some more charges for cops that was involved in the choking murder of Eric Garner. So those are some of the news that I would like to share with you today after we speak to Mr. James Klingman, who I do believe has joined us on our studio line. Do we have you on the line, Mr. Klingman?
Yes, sir. How are you, Scotty?
I'm not going to complain too much. I'm surviving behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. You know, I'm doing the best I can, which is all any of us can do. But, you know, I'm seeking to unite with other like-minded people so that we can empower ourselves despite the obstacles that we face as a oppressed group in this country. So I don't like to complain too much, Mr. Klingman, because I know there's people out there doing far worse than me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And we need to be about positive things as much as possible and get busy collectively doing the work that needs to be done.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I couldn't agree with you more. Now, for those listeners who may be new to our station, as our station has been growing, I'm happy to report. But for those listeners who did not hear the interview that you did with us explaining what 1 Million Conscious Black Voters and Contributors is, which they can find on the web at IamOneOfTheMillion.com. Mr. Klingman, would you tell them what this collective is about? What is it for? What's its purpose? What's its mission?
Well, I'll just give you the truncated version and ask that all your listeners go to our website, IamOneOfTheMillion.com, and read as much of the information that's on our site as is possible. And they'll have a full understanding of what we're about. But this is a movement. It's not an organization. It is a movement to bring our people together, number one, which is to say, as Marcus Garvey said many times, to organize ourselves. Scotty, all of the things that we talk about needing and having to do will not be successful unless they are done in an organized manner and through a vehicle through which we can be successful. So the I Am One of the Million, the 1 million rather, Conscious Black Voters and Contributors is an organized movement. It is also a vehicle through which we can economically empower ourselves and politically empower ourselves. And again, I would love for people to go to the website and read the different articles, watch some of the videos, especially read the 16 planks in our platform that we are supporting and advocating for. And we will also be using those planks in our platform next year. Well, I said next year. It's already next year.
Yes, sir.
During this year's political shenanigans that are going on right now. So rather than, you know, I wouldn't be able to explain everything anyway. It
right.
would take a long time because we have a ton of information
yes,
on
sir.
Our website. And I would ask people to go to IamOneOfTheMillion.com and take a look. And if you're so inclined, join us.
Now, I understand, you know, because I'm connected to many people that's in the movement, and I would consider myself as part of the movement, but y'all recently had a event in just outside of Philadelphia, PA. Can you tell us, you know, briefly about that and what was the outcome of that meeting?
Well, that was what we called a training gathering of our people. It was also an effort to recruit new members, of course, in that area, and anyone who wanted to come from around the country could have attended. We did do a lot of training there, but just as importantly, we gathered together to fellowship, to have relationships. Too often we do things, especially in light of all of the technology we have today where we can talk to people and know people as much as that is possible, you know, on the internet and Facebook and Twitter and all that. But nothing beats a look in someone else's eye. Nothing beats a handshake. Nothing beats a hug. So we really advocate that our members to whatever degree possible, attend those kinds of sessions. We're having another one in March down in West Palm Beach, Florida. And this is in lieu of building our cadre of conscious black people across the country in all states. Right now we're in about 35 states, but building that cadre of people up so that we can convene these kinds of meetings state by state. And, you know, we understand that traveling, you know, can get expensive. So when we get to the point to where we can do these state by state and then have one national meeting once a year, we'll be better off. But right now, we're calling for four of these sessions throughout the year. We're going to have one in West Palm Beach. The one after that is in Jackson, Tennessee. So again, if people go to the website, they can see the plans that we have in store for the 1 million.
And again, the website is IamOneOfTheMillion.
IamOneOfTheMillion.com.
And how can they join? What steps would they need to take to become part of the collective by going to the website? What should they look for in order to become a part of this movement?
Yeah. Well, we ask, first of all, that whoever, you know, wants to join, first read the information. This is what we call a whosoever will let them come movement. Mm-hmm. We're not trying to twist anybody's arm. We're not trying to take anyone away from an organization that they're already in. We're just saying here is a movement. And if you're a part of the 2% of black people that we have through analysis come to the conclusion that exists in this country, 2%, 2 out of every 100, then you join. And how you join is merely, it's very simple. You just fill out the form on the website. Name, address, email, phone number, that kind of thing. Nothing intrusive. And you are a member. Now, part of being a member is also an obligation on your behalf and an agreement on your behalf to, first of all, register if you, depending on what kind of political system you have in your city or state, register as no party affiliated.
Independent.
We don't need to be, we don't need, yes, independent thinking. We need independent thinking voters. If there's an independent party, we're not subscribing to that either. We're saying that black people need to be independent thinkers when it comes to politics if we're ever going to win. So that's one commitment. The other commitment is to contribute to our annual budget and to purchase items that we have on our website. We're not begging people for donations. We're not looking for corporate sponsors and all of that. We're saying that this is a black movement, and we want black people to use our own dollars to support it. We have T-shirts. We have other kinds of things on our site that people can look at. If they want to buy those things, that's fine. But what we really need beyond that, or I should say in addition to that, is just a few dollars every year to create a budget through which we can pay for some of the things that we need administratively. Nothing happens, especially something like this, without somebody writing a check. And too often, you know, we'll get excited and emotional about a movement or an organization. But when it comes to funding that organization or that movement, you know, we take a step back. So we are about circulating our dollars among ourselves. We are about pooling our dollars to increase our own economic power. And we're about creating more conscious millionaires through their businesses, by supporting those businesses, by buying their products in mass. Can you imagine what would happen if we sent out a message to our members, even if we had 100,000, and say, okay, everybody go online and buy a Scotty Reed t-shirt, a Scotty Reed book, a Scotty Reed health product. whatever someone is selling, and they're a conscious business owner, we want them to be a conscious millionaire, because we know that once that money starts coming into them, they will rechannel a portion of that money back to the movement. Mm-hmm. And we become self-sustaining and self-reliant. So that's what this thing is all about. Yeah. Nobody's obligated to do anything. Like I said, we're not trying to force anybody. But if you join, just understand what we're asking you to do. And if you choose to do that, that's fine. If you don't, that's okay too.
Now, I just want to reiterate the importance of us financially supporting conscious black movements, conscious black people, conscious black businesses, right. conscious black organizations. You know, I was talking the other day about Black Talk Media Project, which is a North Carolina-based nonprofit. And, you know, I was talking about it in relation to some of these other outlets that are not run, not controlled by black people. Like public broadcast systems or which is known as PBS, or, you know, National Public Radio. Those are also, those are nonprofits, but they get their funding from their listeners, but also they get grants from corporations. And, you know, even if we're talking about a political organization or an organization that's supposed to focus on, you know, political and social issues. Well, you know, the old saying goes that whoever pays the piper names the tune. And and so if we are turning to a Bill Gates and Belinda Gates Foundation or Arthur T. Viney Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and we don't have autonomy to really do what needs to be done, because we have become dependent on those dollars from outside of our community. And if we want to stay funded, then we have to play the tune that they want us to play.
You got it. You got it. That's why it's so important that we use our own dollars to support ourselves and to build up an economic foundation. And once we build that economic foundation, we will negotiate with anyone from a position of power rather than weakness. We don't need to go to folks with our hat in our hand all the time. Please sponsor me. I'll put your banner up and we'll do this and that. Like you said, then they're going to name the tune. Black people have to move beyond that kind of thinking. And when you brought up the your network, I just talked to Elliot Booker yesterday or today. And, they support the 1 million through their radio show just tremendously. And we have decided to help them to fund that show and then to move maybe to a higher level and help the whole network that you have brought to us. So there are some things in the works that we are aware of and that we are moving forward on. And what you brought up is so important. We always say how much we appreciate Scotty Reed's show and Elliot's show and Time for Awakening, Brother M.O.J. You know, we have to support that with our dollars, too. Nothing happens in this country, unfortunately, unless somebody writes a check. So $20 a person, if we had 1 million people, $20 a person, what is that on an individual basis? Nothing.
Right.
For a whole year? But look at what we would have collectively. Look at what we could do. Look at how wide your listenership could be. Look at how often you could be on the radio and bring in people that would help enlighten us. I mean, the possibilities are limitless.
Now, the reason that I contacted you and asked you to come on and speak with us today, and that is concerning, and you mentioned it earlier about the planks that the listeners will find if they visit IamOneOfTheMillion.com. And, you know, if they look at the planks, it has different information. Some of the stuff that you mentioned, like, you know, becoming registering as an independent voter, if their states allow that, you know, and just to clarify with people, in some states they have closed primaries. And so you had to be registered with one party or the other if you wanted to, you know, cast a primary vote. And so I understand if you're in a state like that, then yes, you do have to whatever party you want to affect in the primaries. But that still doesn't mean that you got to support whatever candidate comes out of that primary. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
So
that's right.
So, you know, that's part of the planks. But you all at I Am One of the Million recently added another plank, and it is issue that is near and dear to my heart. We have a program called New Abolitionist Radio that's been airing for going on 5 years on our network, and it's a weekly program that talks about 21st century slavery and human trafficking, and we point to the 13th Amendment and say that because of that exception clause, we can rightly say that slavery has never technically been abolished because of that exception clause. And I was so excited to hear from another one of our listeners and a supporter of I Am One of the Million, Brother Ralph. Brother Ralph, if you're out there, you know, shout out to you. But he sent me an email telling me that, hey, they're adding this as the plank calling for the removal of the 13th Amendment. Would you talk about, you know, the process that y'all went through in deciding to add this as a plank?
Well, the beauty of this movement is we don't have to have a meeting. We don't have to go through what I call robots' rules of order to do what we need to do for our people. I've been writing about this for years, probably about 20 years, about this particular amendment. Long before the New Jim Crow book came out, I even met with Michelle Alexander after her book came out and suggested we get together and work collectively on this. That didn't happen. So I continued to write about it. One day, Almasika and I were talking. Almasika Gayuka, who is a co-sponsor of this movement, co-convener, and I said, "I'm going to write up." No, I put it on an email. we should have a plank dealing with this clause in the 13th Amendment. And of course, knowing him, you know, he threw it right back to me. You ought to write it. So I wrote it up, and, you know, we bounced it back and forth a couple of times between him and myself and Brother Sam Burnham down in Florida as well. And what you see on the website is plank number 18. Matter of fact, it follows number 17, obviously, which is support for African-American media ownership. The next one after that is amending the 13th Amendment. That's what we're calling for, amending the amendment. And those of you who are familiar with the 13th Amendment, if you know, it does have an exception clause in it.
Let me read it for him, Mr. Kleeman.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, because recently, and this is something I noticed myself, when they started having all these 150th anniversaries of the Civil War, 150th anniversary of the ratification of the 13th Amendment. And I was reading all these articles, and they just had this big, you know, ceremony and event in Washington, D.C., where the president spoke and all these other politicians and honored persons and whatnot. And on Speaker of the House Paul Ryan's website, where he announced, you know, speakerhouse.gov, I think is it. But when I came across that, and I went to, you know, his announcement on the website about this, you know, 13th Amendment ratification commemoration ceremony, I noticed that, hell, you just like the rest of these writers who writing about the Civil War, writing about slavery being abolished, mentioning the 13th Amendment, but you don't even publish the text of the 13th Amendment. And to me, that is a concerted effort to deceive the people, because why would you announce this commemoration ceremony, but then you don't even put the text, you know, and then at the ceremony, you would think they would have this big giant poster board or placard or something with the text of the 13th Amendment. I saw none of that. All right. But this is the 13th Amendment, listeners. Section 1, neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as a punishment for crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. Section 2. Congress shall have power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. And now, before I get your comments, let me just say something about Section 2. When they mentioned Section 2, when I first came across this 5 years ago, all right, that's when I found out about the 13th Amendment just 5 years ago. And now I am finding that people like yourself before me have been writing about this, but it did not enter into the mainstream media because they don't want people to know. But when I read Section 2, I admit Congress shall have power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. What are they enforcing? Legalized slavery. I immediately thought about the black codes that followed after the Civil War, after they so-called emancipated the enslaved Africans. I thought about all of that legislation. I thought about bringing it up to modern times. The drug war, the three strikes and you're a slave for life, you know, that was passed during Clinton. And so that's how I was reading that. I'm not a lawyer or anything like that, but I can read and I do have pretty good comprehension skills and I know how to look up the definition of words. Okay. And so I was like really excited to hear that I am one of the million adopted this as a plank. So could you speak on the 13th Amendment?
Yes, you laid it out. You know, you don't have to be an attorney. All you need to do is read. And if you don't understand it, there are ways and other people who can help you understand it. And you also write about no one wanting to put this kind of information out in the mainstream media. Like I said, I mean, I've been writing about this for years. That's where I came up with the Boycott Prisons campaign. Mm-hmm. But you talk about Paul Ryan. He said that it's a 43-word amendment. He was so happy. He said, but a lot of times we miss the message in it. He said that. It's only 43 words long. It's so short that you can almost miss its whole significance. Now, ironically, he's right, because black people have missed it. Amos Wilson wrote in his book, Black on Black Violence, that 5 years after the Civil War, the black prison population went from nearly zero to over 33%. And you just alluded to it with the black codes. The Emancipation Proclamation, we were all taught in school, elementary school and high school about that, and freed the slaves. Well, if that freed the slaves, why did they need to have a 13th Amendment? Mm-hmm. So it's a matter of common sense. As we look at these developments and these laws and all that, to analyze them and say, hey, wait a minute, let me do a little research on this thing. They had us believing that we were free in 1863 with the Emancipation. Mm-hmm. And then again in 1865 in Galveston, Texas. That's why we celebrate Juneteenth. And then again in 1870 with the 13th Amendment. I mean, it's just a matter of reading this and understanding what it's saying, picking it apart. One little word in that 13th Amendment, except, is the key to everything they're doing today. I just saw an article, you probably saw it too, where these brothers were in prison and they were growing fruit and vegetables. Mm-hmm. And that stuff was going to Whole Foods. Mm-hmm. And these brothers were getting paid like 50 cents a day or something. Mm-hmm. Slave, prison slaves, and it's legal. Mm-hmm. And there are many products on the open market that are made by prisons, many services, mm-hmm. but it's legal. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm so happy too that we have this on our as part of our platform. And it'll be interesting to see who will and who will not support this during this political season. So as you went into our site and you saw this, I mean, this is the plank that gets you excited. There are other planks that get other people excited. And you're doing your job by having me on to talk about it, by spreading the word to your people. There's something within the 1 million that each of us can latch on to. It's just a matter of getting involved and doing the work around that particular issue or cause that excites us, you know?
Yes, sir.
And I appreciate your input on it and your advocating and promoting it on our behalf.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I need to take a station identification break, and we do have a caller. Let me give out the call-in number for any listeners that have any questions or observations that they would like to share. There are two ways that you can get in contact with us here on the program, 641-715-3660, 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032 pound. Greetings to those already dialed in. Anytime you would like to speak, hit star 6 and 1 on your phone keypad. You can also take those same steps with the web-based flash phone, the voice over IP. You can make a free call from anywhere in the world. And the last way is to call us on the studio line, which is 704-951-5030. That's 704-951-5030. Our guest today is Mr. James Klingman of 1 Million Conscious Black Voters and Contributors. You can also check out the website IamOneOfTheMillion.com. And I also invite you to visit the website Blackonomics.com. That's Blackonomics.com. And after on the other side, after we take this first caller, I also would like to, Mr. Klingman, for you to talk about the economic impact of the 13th Amendment on our communities, because it does have an economic impact with them practicing, yes, still practicing slavery. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed, broadcasting every Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday at 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. Stay tuned. We'll be right back on the other side.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Area code 215, area code 215. Thank you for calling into the program. Please state your name and go ahead with your question or comment.
This is Brother Reggie out of Philadelphia, 1 Million. Scotty, thank you for having Brother Klingman on. Appreciate the topic. The one question I have for Brother Klingman is this movement and the membership. What kind of caliber of people are you looking for, and what kind of foresight do they need to be part of this movement?
I appreciate your call, Reggie. Simply put, we're looking for, of course, conscious people. Now, what is a conscious person, and what does it take to be conscious? We have some information on our website that talks about that. A black paper that Amasika wrote some time ago. But just our simple definition, it's just black folks who are not only aware, black folks who are not only educated, black folks who not only call themselves nationalists, pan-Africanists, and everything else, but black folks who have a consciousness that is disturbed enough about our position in this country, that they are willing to step up and do something rather than just continue to have conversations about it. You know, we're big on rhetoric, and we're big on rapping and clapping and going to meetings and all that, and we walk away and don't do anything. We're looking for the committed 2% of black folks who are willing to take the next step, and that is action. Organize ourselves and then devise strategies around empowering ourselves politically and economically. That's what a conscious person does, and we're looking for those folks. Because, you know, a lot of us say we're conscious, and we could be, but there are levels of consciousness. And the ones we're looking for are the ones that have reached a level of consciousness that gives them the incentive and the inspiration to do more than just talk about being conscious.
Brother Reggie. Go ahead, Brother Reggie.
Scotty, on the topic that you're talking about, for any young people that are listening, it was a hip-hop artist, Roz Kos, that had a song named The Nature of the Threat. If you listen to that song, you will hear him apply to young black men and women that amendment, that's what you really are. So something to check out, listen to that song, you get some information. You might not agree with everything that he has in that song, but I'm sure when you start looking things up, you're going to be on a journey of learning about yourself. And I appreciate both you brothers.
Thank you, Reggie. Appreciate you too, Brother Reggie. And tell people when they can listen, because Brother Reggie is a host and co-producer of Time for Awakening Radio. And they just launched a new website, timeforawakening.com, right, Brother Reggie? Can you tell them about?
Yeah. The website is timeforanawakening.com. Program is every Sunday, 7 to 9 p.m. This Sunday we'll have Sister Zaza Ali will be on. We'll be talking about a myriad of topics, including the legacy of Francis Quest Welsing. And we're looking forward to having a great show, and we appreciate the support. Please go to the website, 1inamillion.com. Look at the information, read through it, read through the articles, check out the information. It's most important for our people to start looking at intelligence as being sexy and start reading. Mm-hmm. Reading the information, reading, analyzing, and then applying the information. That's what we need to start doing a little more. But I appreciate your brothers.
All right. Thank you, Brother Reggie. Okay.
Q&A queue is cleared.
Okay. And again, that last point that he made about reading. Again, I went through college, you know, from kindergarten to college. Never, ever did a teacher pull out the 13th Amendment, whether it was Black History Month, and they were talking about, you know, the Civil War, talking about Harriet Tubman, never, ever pulled out the 13th Amendment. And again, it was only 5 years that by happenstance I came across the text of the 13th Amendment. And like Brother Reggie said, reading is so important, and having the intelligence to understand what you're reading and breaking it down, Mr. Kleeman.
That's right. Exactly right. It's been there for 150 years, bro.
Yes.
But we have to go beyond the fact that it's there. We have to look into why it's there.
Mm-hmm.
And you hit on it. You know, right after Civil War, white folks say, well, how are we going to bring the crops in?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we got to figure something out.
Mm-hmm.
So they devised a way where black people could be convicted for little or nothing, put on these prison farms, some of which still exist in the South,
yes,
and have them continue doing the same work they were doing prior to so-called freedom.
Right. The convict leasing program. You know, and you will even see it, you know, for those people that I don't watch a whole lot of television or cable or anything, but sometimes in my downtime, I'll watch a movie or I'll watch a series. And there's this recent series, I don't know how long it's been out there, it's called Hell on Wheels. And it's about this man who works for the railroad, and he's building a railroad. You got these two railroad companies competing for contracts from the U.S. government. Well, very small storyline was the black railroad workers, and they were all prisoners on lease to the railroad companies.
Right in front of your eyes, right?
Yes.
In a movie, yeah.
Right there. But, of course, they're not going to give you all the background information and why these people were in prison. You just going to assume that they was murderers or rapists or robbers.
Right.
But, no. The black codes where you could... Now, you think about locking somebody up for vagrancy because they homeless. When right after, you know, the Emancipation Proclamation, you had a bunch of homeless formerly enslaved Africans wandering the roads. Who knows how many even perished during that time? And then if they didn't have a job, we can put you in jail. Then you're in the convict leasing program. So that's why I wanted you to talk about the economics of it, not just the past economics of this stolen labor, but how it's even infecting our communities today.
One other thing I'll add to what you said, I kind of chuckled about not reading it. We celebrate Juneteenth because of the General Order Number 3 that Gordon Granger read to people in Galveston, Texas, right? So I wonder how many people have ever read General Order Number 3. And part of it gets to what you just talked about, vagrancy. In that order, yes, it says you're free, but we recommend that you continue to work for your former masters. And it also says, and I'm not quoting it, I don't have it in front of me right now, but it also says that you will not be allowed to gather around military posts, and it has some other statement in there about black folks, you know, just hanging around. And if you did that, you get put in jail. So, again, we need to read these things, not just celebrate them and go about our business. Let's read and see what these things say, and then we'll have a better understanding of how we are where we are today. Now, on the economic side, yeah, the leasing was the first step. But as we have evolved over the last 100 years, 150 years to this prison industrial complex, like a lot of us like to talk about, we're in a system now where, of course, prisons are privatized. They're on the stock market. They're making billions of dollars. They go into small towns and remote locations and guarantee that town that they will have 80, 90, 95% occupancy and create a lot of jobs. So the town will give them tax breaks and they'll come in and build a prison, and prisoners will be sent there even if they have to be sent there from other states.
That's the human trafficking piece, Mr. Kleeman. That's why we call it 21st century slavery and human trafficking. Because of what you just said.
Yep. So we look at it today. We look on the economic side. And we know how many black folks steal these prisons. And I'll say black and poor people. A lot of Hispanics can deal too, but black proportionately have the highest number of brothers and sisters in prison. Now, I suggested years ago that, first of all, we need to be selling something to these prisons. If they're going to house our people, some of whom shouldn't even be there, and we see every week somebody getting out after 28 years and they shouldn't have been there, that's bad enough. But we're not selling anything to these prisons. Our companies aren't selling soap to them and hair grease to them and all that. So they have a captive market. And don't let me start talking about the telephone fees, where it costs you $15 to talk for a minute to call back home. So that's one aspect of it is we're not selling anything to them. And, you know, some people found, well, that's our people in prison. Sell the prison something. Insist upon it. As long as they're going to keep our people in there, sell them something. And then the other aspect of it is I wrote this piece called Prisonpreneurs. Learn how to do something. If you're in there and got some time in your hands, learn how to do something so that when you come out, you can sell something. And my slogan around that was, let's get out of the sales, C-E-L-L-S, and get into sales, S-A-L-E-S. The other aspect of it is that, you know, as we see these prisons on the stock market and we're manufacturing all of these products, doing all these services for the prison owners, which are, you know, private individuals and stockholders. What do we see, and what are we willing to do to change that? Well, let's boycott prisons. Let's have boycott prisons campaigns all over this country in cities where black folks are. Let's say, look, stop doing stuff that's going to put you behind bars and make you a slave. Why would you want to commit? Why would you want to volunteer to be a slave? Until they remove that clause and make that amendment, call it down from 43 words down to 29 words by taking out that exception clause, why would you want to expose yourself by doing something stupid in most cases to be put behind bars and be a slave? So we need to start boycott prison campaigns. And what that means is, if an education campaign, It's also a campaign that provides alternative behaviors for our young people, especially to show them how they can make something or do something and sell it to somebody and keep them off that track that's going to lead them behind bars.
Yes, sir.
So let me... economic peace, man, is so important, and it has a lot of tentacles. But I'm glad you brought that up, because we need to look at all those aspects, the history and the current state of this prison industrial complex as it relates to black people and poor people.
You know, an example, I call that having battlefield awareness, situational awareness, codification. The part you was talking about, let's not do things that's going to put us in the path, on the path to slavery. Let me use this for example. There's the professional football team, Carolina Panthers, there in Charlotte. All right. And this was during training camp, you know, where people were trying to make the teams, these young men coming in, trying out and going through training camp and whatnot. And there was a story about this young black man who's trying to make the Carolina Panthers, speeding down the highway, no seatbelt on, and smoking weed in the car. Now, I'm like, that is just so stupid. That is just so stupid. What, you smoking weed in the car, you're speeding, and you ain't got your seatbelt on. And so he got arrested and immediately got dismissed from the team. And I was like, that was totally preventable. Now, I'm not even going to talk about, you know, the constitutionality or the unconstitutionality of drug wars. We know many of these laws are wrong or whatnot, and we know the intent of these laws. But outside of protesting and movements to repeal these laws, well, they are on the books and they are as they are. And the slave catchers out there that some people call police are, you know, they have a quota that they got to meet of catching slaves and whatnot. And so why would you smoke weed in the car? Why would you speed? Why would you not put on a seatbelt?
It's just stupid. That's what I call it. I call it what it is. It's stupid. You know, you ain't got nothing coming when you go down before that judge. You ain't got nothing coming but some time. Why would you put yourself, why would you expose yourself to a system that you know is unfair? You know it's unfair to black people. Why would you volunteer to be part of a free labor pool for a prison industrial complex that we constantly complain about? So, you know, some of that is on us, and we need to recognize that and teach our children about alternatives to it and hope and pray that they will not do what you just described. This person lost a multi-million dollar career for doing something stupid.
Yes, sir. Yes, he did. Now, some of the other things you mentioned, there has been some political movement on it. There have been, you know, different organizations that are attacking what some people call the, you know, prison industrial complex, which I call the continuation of slavery, because the vast majority of the prisoners are not rapists, robbers, and child molesters or anything like that. That's a very, very, very small percentage. The rest of them are in there for nonviolent so-called drug crimes or other legislation that is trying to control people's behavior that they've been engaged in for thousands of years. You know, I feel like if I'm not harming another individual, if I'm not taking their liberty away from them, like kidnapping them and holding them against their will so I could do whatever sick, perverted thing I want to do, if I'm not stealing their property, if I'm not intruding on their pursuit of happiness, then I'm not committing a crime. Okay?
Right.
That's the way I look at it. So that's the vast majority of the modern day enslaved people that are on these plantations to this day. So there have been a number of different organizations, mostly at the grassroots level, who have been putting pressure on the federal government and on politicians to make changes. You mentioned, you know, how it cost somebody $15 to make a one minute call to talk to their family. That might be their mother, that might be their children, you know, and they want to stay in touch, you know. And that recently, the FCC recently issued some new rules regulating that and knocking those high fees down. Now, you know, one might ask the question, well, you just didn't figure out that they was charging all these people money. You was more than willing to go along with it until it started being brought to the attention of the masses, and people just kept fighting and putting pressure on them to do that. So again, I am one of the million conscious black voters and contributors. I see that as, you know, a vehicle to put pressure on these politicians, these government agencies to do the right thing, because they're not going to do it on their own. They're
just not going to do it. That's why I said, I can't wait to see somebody stand up when we approach them about this and say, no, I don't support taking that clause out. I can't wait to see that.
Oh, I have
because
had someone.
Then the question will be asked, why is it needed?
I had somebody, I had called the representative. I don't call them my representatives, whether I voted, cast a vote for them or not, because I know you ain't really representing me. So I call them, you know, corporate officers of USA Inc. that's appointed from this district that I live in. So Patrick McHenry, he's a Republican over the 10th District of North Carolina. And I had called his office and been writing him about the 13th Amendment and removing the exception clause and, you know, telling him that it doesn't even fall in line with the North Carolina Constitution that says slavery shall be abolished, period. It don't say no except. It say it should be abolished. All right. Now, they do put some tricky language in there because they do allow for involuntary servitude. Well, dang, slavery and involuntary servitude is basically the same thing. You know what I'm saying? So they are practicing deception in the North Carolina Constitution. But, you know, with that said, I talked to one of his staff members, and we were talking about this. And this man, this white man, getting angry at me over it and want to argue me and saying, you know, this isn't slavery. When I think of, you know, when I see prisoners on the side of the road picking up trash or patching up the road, I don't look at that as slavery. I think of slavery as, you know, plantations where people being like roots, you know what I'm saying? And so I'm like, I know this man ain't dumb. I know he ain't get to where he at and in the position he's in if he couldn't read and comprehend what he was reading. So he was just, what he was trying to do is just stonewall and hoping that I'll just give up and shut up about it. But I'm not. So a lot of these, Mr. Kleeman, a lot of these politicians, again, pointing to this charade that they had commemorating the ratification of the 13th Amendment, that just goes to show you how evil and deceptive these people are, because they know slavery ain't never been abolished.
Yeah, and I can't, you know, I sort of say I can't believe, but I can believe it, that the president was there celebrating this. And he nor any people on the Congressional Black Caucus that I know of have said at any time that we need to take this exception out of this amendment. I'll celebrate it, and I'll talk about it, but like you said, it won't be posted up in the background for everybody to read. We'll just celebrate it and move on. I mean, what would be so hard about Congress people coming together and saying, look, we're going to write up, we call it a House bill or whatever they call it, to change this,
to get
amend
this
removed. I mean, I would be so proud of them if they did that, but like I said, it's going to be an interesting year because the 1 million is not shy. It is not shy. And the very moment we present this to somebody, if they come back with the kind of nonsense that you just described, we don't want to hear that, because the next question is, why do you need it in there?
That's
it's
a good
not
question.
Necessary. It never was. But why do you need it in there? If it's not needed, take it out.
You know,
and if you do need it, that means you want some free labor.
Exactly. Cheap labor, as Kamala Harris, who is the Attorney General of California, a Democrat who's seeking to replace Barbara Boxer, I believe, or either Dianne Feinstein, one of them that's retiring in the Democratic Party. She's running for senator. And this is a black woman, although she also has Indian heritage. One of her parents is from India. But she, her office argued in court that the state of California could not let all these prisoners go because they were ordered by the Supreme Court to ease overcrowding. And she argued, her office argued in court that if they was to do that, that would deplete the state of California of a cheap labor pool. They argued this in court.
And she's a real good friend and colleague of President Obama.
These people know exactly what they're doing. We reported last week on New Abolitionist Radio. Was it this past Wednesday? It might have been last week. That in the 1990s, you know, they reported that the state of California made $150 million in a year from sales of products and services provided by prisoners. And just think about what it might be now. That's a lot of money.
Billions of dollars, bros. Billions of dollars going through that system. And we are providing most of it. We complain a lot about having come up through enslavement and working for free and providing free labor and all that. But here we are 150 years removed. What are we doing about the free labor we're providing now?
Right, right.
We have the Constitution. I understand, you know, people make the argument, well, that's just punishment. You got to go and fix the roads. I remember driving down to North Carolina when I was young, where, you know, relatives, and we would see the brothers on, you know, on the side with the shovels and all that, whatever they were doing. I was real young, but they called them the chain gang back then. And, you know, I understand punishment, but making a profit off that punishment, no. I draw the line on that one, bro. That's not punishment. That's a business.
And the last point I want to make, and, you know, I want to get your final comments, but I want to make this point, too. You know, with the felony disenfranchisement, that's lifetime punishment right there. But the reason that they do that is to create the conditions where these people will be forced to come back to prison because they out there committing crimes of survival, you know. A lot of people don't understand that. They don't understand that. These companies like AT&T, there are other, you know, there's a number of big corporations, Target, Walmart, that use prison slave labor. Now, we know the unemployment of the black in the black community, particularly black males and black teenagers, is always either triple, maybe even quadruple, or whatever they say the national unemployment rate is. Now, they'll get these companies to hire these people, our people, if they're in the prison. They'll give them a job making slave wages, pennies on the dollars or whatever, an hour. But you won't even give them a job when they get out.
Right. Right.
It's set
up. I talked about that as well at a press conference at the National Press Club back around 2005. If you go on YouTube, you can see it. We were talking about immigration. I said almost exactly what you just said. Give our people, black people won't work those jobs, so we have to bring in other people. I said, give our people a get out of jail free card and pay a living wage, and we'll certainly do those jobs. So they're always trying to come up with some rationale for, like you said, keeping us in prison, putting us in, keeping us in, and making us come back.
Mm-hmm.
Recidivism is, you know, what is it now? 60% or so. I mean, it's some high number.
It's high. It's
and
high.
You're right. It's planned for you to come back. It's not goodbye. It's I'll see you later.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Kleeman, I want to thank you again for joining me again. I can't express how appreciative I am I am one of the million for adding this plank. It is very, very important. Like I tell people, it is on us to, you know, they fooled our ancestors. All them black soldiers that fought to end slavery, all, you know, the Harriet Tubmans, the Frederick Douglass. Well, Frederick, you know, later after the Civil War, he knew that they had them pulled the fraud on our people and that, you know, they still enslaving us. But it is on us. It is on us to continue their work and end slavery once and for all. So I was so excited when Brother Ralph told me that you all were adding this as a plank. And so just thank you. Thank you. I can't thank you enough for adding that. Is there anything you would like to say in closing and, again, encouraging people to become part of the movement?
Well, of course, I'm always in the marketing mode for I Am One of the Million. Please go to the website and consider joining up with us as we continue to use the economic leverage, collective economic and political leverage that we have right in our hands. We're looking for 1 million. I'd be happy if we miss that and only get a few hundred thousand. That's fine. But we're striving for 1 million. And we look forward to getting those conscious brothers and sisters who are willing to do the kinds of things we've been talking about today. But go and read the information on the website and join us. Again, if anyone wants to reach me, it's through blackonomics.com. My phone number is on there, on the bio, my email and everything. So I appreciate you, Scotty, and all the work that you do, bro. And the format, the forum rather, that you provide for our people to share information so that we can be more empowered.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. And you have a good day.
All right, Brett. You too.
All right. That was Mr. Klingman. Again, I hadn't even known that he had been writing about this for years. I didn't even know that he had contacted Michelle Alexander about collaborating with him. And I'm not trying to say anything bad about Michelle Alexander and her book, The New Jim Crow, but it ain't new. It's the same old, and it's not mass incarceration. It is the continuation of slavery. And see, this goes back to what I was saying earlier about he who pays the piper names the tune. And it should be no secret. This is public information. That she got a grant from the George Soros Open Society Foundation that allowed her to take a year off of teaching and write this book. And again, the book does reveal a lot of good information that people were unaware of. But it also doesn't make it clear as to what. It's nothing new about Jim Crow. It's nothing new about the oppression of black people. This is a continuation of centuries, of the centuries-long war on us as a people and even other non-white people, melanated people. And then, the class warfare, the poor whites. But we as black people are the number one targets of slavery, always have been, and we continue to be to this day. I'm just thankful for some of the work of our ancestors, but I'm also, I'm shocked, but I'm not shocked that we have had individuals talking about the 13th Amendment going on decades, and this information has yet to reach the masses of the hundreds of millions of people in this country. There is a reason. There's a reason, and there is a way that this information is being suppressed, and that's why I say you cannot trust corporate media. Do I watch corporate media? Yes, I do from time to time, but I know they're not giving me the whole story. I know that they are withholding pertinent information. And when we come back on the other side of this break, we're going to play some message music. But when we come back on the other side of this break, we want to talk about a story that the mass media is ignoring. And that story is about Hillary Clinton's emails that she had on that private server storing secret information, confidential information, top secret information. This woman should not even be qualified to be running for CEO of America unless they looking for crooks, unless they looking for criminals, unless they looking for enslavers. And certainly she's qualified in that regard. OK, but we gonna talk about why isn't the mainstream media reporting on this story that among the latest batch of 3,000 emails that was released just before the new year, where it shows that the Obama administration, which she was working for at the time, told a whole bunch of lies to the world, to the masses, about Muammar Gaddafi, the prime minister of Libya, lying about he's about to slaughter his own people and all these people, and we got to go in and stop them. And the real reason that they did that, we've talked about before on this program, on Tando Radio Show, which comes on at 6 o'clock p.m., about Gaddafi proposing a united African currency backed by gold, which would have destroyed the European currency. It would have destroyed it would be no currency that could touch it, because it's backed by the precious metals and the resources that are abundant in Africa, if they're not being controlled by Western corporations. You know, because just like we say, slavery has never been abolished in this country. The colonization of Africa has never stopped. And when I say the colonization, I'm talking about the European colonization. We hear that Africa got its independence, but if you ask me, the only country that I'm aware of, and there could be some other ones that I'm not aware of, but the only countries that I'm aware of that was exercising true independence was Libya, and the other one is Zimbabwe under Mugabe. So we know what they did to Mugabe and how they destroyed the Zimbabwe currency to try to cause that country to collapse, to remove Mugabe out from power because of the land reclamation programs he was running and taking the land back from the European colonizers, the settlers, and giving it back to the people who it truly belongs to. And so they overthrew Libya because an African unified currency backed by gold would liberate all of Africa. And Africa would have become one of the most powerful continents on the face of the planet. Something that Marcus Garvey was pushing Africans to become. So we'll talk about that on the other side, and we'll also talk about the dangers of proxy racism. You had this black NYPD sergeant who supervised the arrest that resulted in Eric Garner being choked to death by a white cop. Well, we should say several of them, because some of them, it wasn't just Panatello. He had the chokehold on them, but the other cops was all piled on top of them too. And she supervised it. She didn't say stop choking him. She didn't say, y'all, he said he can't breathe. Get off of him. He ain't wanted for murder. He ain't no rapist. He didn't molest a child, you know. We're trying to arrest him allegedly for selling untaxed loose cigarettes on the street. So don't y'all think y'all, getting out of. No, she didn't say none of that. And she's been charged. She's been charged, and the only one so far to be charged. And again, I do have to do more research on this story to get the details, because I'm not clear about this, because this seems to be done. These charges seem to have been brought forth by the NYPD itself and not the prosecutor who's over whatever district. I think that's Staten Island. You know, the prosecutor who failed to get an indictment for Panatello, the one who put the chokehold. But all of them participated in his murder. So that's another story that I want to take a look at. See, proxy racism, you know, as long as they can use you. But once they know that they need a sacrificial lamb, so to speak, you usually the first one that's going to be made to fall on the sword. Proxy racism, man, it's one of the biggest problems, in my opinion, in terms of a system based on racism and white supremacy. So those are some of the things that I'd like to share with you on the other side. If you have a question, comment, observation, You can call us at 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032-pound. Hit *6 and 1 to enter into the caller's queue. Use the web-based flash phone as well. And the studio line is 704-951-5030. Sometimes I miss the notification that I have a call coming in on the studio line, but you are more than welcome to leave a voicemail with your comment if it's not a question and you just want to, you know, add on to what we've been talking about today. I can play the voicemail for the listening audience. So if I miss it, leave a voicemail. And if I don't play it during today's broadcast, I'll play it during a future broadcast. All right. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. Stay tuned. We'll be back on the other side of this message music break.
This is Sean Hayes with Hood News, and you're listening to the Black Talk Radio Network. Stay tuned.
America Negro collectively is richer. And most nations of the world, we have an annual income of more than $30 billion a year, which is more than all of the exports of the United States and more than the national budget of Canada. Did you know that? That's power right there, if we know how to prove.
We should own and operate and control the economy of our community. We have to become involved in a program of re-education. To educate our people into the importance of knowing that when you spend your dollar out of the community in which you live, the community in which you spend your money becomes richer and richer. The community out of which you take your money becomes poorer and poorer. And because these Negroes who have been misled, misguided, are breaking their necks to take their money and spend it with the man is becoming richer and richer, and you're becoming poorer and poorer. And then what happens? The community in which you live becomes a slum. It becomes a ghetto. The conditions become run down. And then you have the audacity to complain about poor housing in a run-down community. Why, you run it down yourself when you take your dollar.
We've got to strengthen black institutions. I call upon you to take your money out of the banks downtown and deposit your money in Tri-State Bank. We are telling you to follow what we are doing. Put your money there. You have 6 or 7 black insurance companies here. Take out your insurance there. Now, these are some practical things that we can do. We begin the process of building a great economic base. We've got to give ourselves to this struggle until the end. We've got to see it through.
So our people not only have to be re-educated to the importance of supporting black business, but the black man himself has to be made aware of the importance of going into business. And once you and I go into business, we own and operate at least the businesses in our community, what we will be doing is developing a situation wherein we will actually be able to create employment for the people in the community.
The black man must unite in one grand racial hierarchy, making a racial empire upon which the sun shall never set. Be black, by black, be black, and all of them together with
them. American Negro collectively is richer. And most nations of the world, we have an annual income of more than $30 billion a year, which is more.
Do you think that the white right wing is using the black militants to worst gain war against the black people in America?
Well, as I see it, the full-scale war against us has been going on for some 400 years.
I mean, completely, but, white us out, you know, the black people out, I mean, that they can open the concentration camps, they can have justification of this backing off the black ghetto. buying it off, put troops around it. You think the right wing agitating the Black Panther Mania, the Black Militant Group in that direction?
I don't really think that whether they're agitating or not, I won't say that they're not. But what they're putting themselves in for is quite a different thing. You see, in other words, as far as Black people being slaughtered, we're slaughtered every day, and historically, 50 million Black people were killed on the Middle Passage alone, according to Melvin J. Herskovich. And this was an act of genocide, which is not talked about, and that the only thing people talk about is the plight of the Jews, where 6 million were killed, and when I state that 50 million Black people were killed, just bring them to this country, no one understands this. But what I'm saying is that our real danger is not the Burchites or the Minutemen or some other fanatics. That our danger is really the people who wear the uniform of the establishment, dressed in the clothes of the military or the police department. They're strong enough to wipe us out, they're strong enough to inflict great harm upon the community. And this thing about the fanatics going around agitating, I don't think it will have a great consequence to the Black community. The killing of little Bobby Hutton, that treasure, was a matter of attempting to wipe out the leadership of the Panther, along with getting rid of Eldridge Cleaver because of his book, Soul on Ice, that reveals many things about the corruption of the clean penal system. Not only the Black Panther Party, Black people in general are in danger. As you would note, that in the community where the police ambushed the Panthers, that the police fired upon the community in general. They fired in people's homes where there might have been women and children. Matter of fact, I understand that a child was almost killed. And that it was a continuation of the traditional tactics, not only of the Oakland Police Department, but the police throughout the country. And an immediate end will have to be put to this. And I think that what's happening now is that the Black Panther Party is merely speeding up time. As we know that whenever a man becomes frantic and strikes wildly, that he's becoming very weak. He's striking out everyone in the world, and we know that he won't be able to engage the whole colored world into a war, and also fight a civil war here with the revolutionary people of America.
I am.
One of the million.
One of the million.
One of the million.
Our conscious is that speck of light that makes us aware of who we are and what's around us.
I am one.
We have to get out of that mind frame of looking for reasons or being mad and looking for reasons to not work with each other, to not do anything collective.
Everything that's boiling over now, because it's been simmering for quite some time, but we're just at a place where a lot of stuff is just being revealed.
We have to live our lives, we have to go to work, we have to do all of that. That's the reality of living in this society. It's quite a challenge. It's quite a challenge to live a very village-type life in a society. But we must not stop. We must not give up on that dream. Other people, other coaches are doing it all the time. So check out your local international corridor. I guarantee there's a Korean town, there's a Chinatown, there's a Spanish town or a Mexican town, whatever. There's nothing wrong with claiming your culture. And for us Black people, if it's African town or if you want to go down to the country, could it be Nigerian town? There's nothing wrong with that.
So many want change. So many want to see something different, but I don't think they know how to do it.
Like, real talk, just stop getting hang up on religion. It's all, I hate to say it like this, but is the same in so many different ways, in various different ways, in very different geographies, locations, and all that. And that's one thing we have to get over. This person may practice this form of religion, and this person might practice this form of religion. If it's love, bring it together some type of way. Let that not be the reason why we can't get together, why we can't fellowship.
You could be one too.
Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio, new black media for the new millennium.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Scotty Reed in on this broadcast from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. Again, check out the website, IamOneOfTheMillion.com. Again, we want to thank Mr. James Kleeman for joining us earlier today. Now, I want to transition and talk about this news story. I have linked to this email that's on foreign policy, website, this article that appeared on foreignpolicyjournal.com just 2 days ago. Now, during the break, you know, I went and got some refreshment, and I took a look at, you know, CNN to see what they were talking about. And, you know, they had President Obama on in the past couple of days. You know, he recently took some executive action to require in every state, because in some states they already do this because it's part of state law. But he took executive action to order the ATF to start issuing license and requiring licensing of people selling guns online, as well as selling them at gun shows where they had not been required to do background checks. Again, you know, I was speaking with a lady online, and she was saying how, you know, her husband had just bought a gun online and he had to go through a background check. And I was like, yep, that's because your state requires that. You know, he has to comply with state law, and that's why they had to do a background check on him to sell him that weapon. And so that's all he has done, really. Now, we can get into debates about whether or not it's logical to allow people to just make a living selling hundreds of guns, perhaps thousands of guns every year to people that they are not doing background checks on. That's not what I want to talk about. What I want to talk about is this: the corporate media is hyping this up. They're, you know, providing wall-to-wall coverage about this for days. Last night on CNN, you know, President Obama had a town hall meeting and whatnot, and, you know, just stupid people saying stupid things. Nothing that he has done, you know, required is going to say, hey, the police got to go to your home and confiscate your guns, or, you know, you're going to be prohibited from buying guns. Now, you know, some of the people that want to defend him and whatnot, and which I never do, I don't defend anybody. I just try to bring you objective facts. And, you know, they are talking about keeping the guns out of the hands of criminals. Well, who are they calling criminals? Number one, you a criminal, Mr. Patrick McHenry over the 10th District of North Carolina. You know, all of these people are criminals. And this story about Hillary Clinton is going to illustrate that. But who are the criminals? And they're talking about people with that felony status, what we were talking about with Mr. Kleeman, and how they create the revolving door of preventing people from getting employment so that they'll be forced to commit crimes of survival, forced to sell drugs, forced to engage in prostitution and whatnot, so that they can feed, clothe, and house themselves. And so if you're going to give, where is the constitutionality of lifetime punishment through felony status? In my opinion, I don't care if you supposed to have went to prison because you really did commit a crime against someone, or you were wrongfully convicted, or you were convicted on unconstitutional, unjust laws. Once you have done your time, That judge sentenced you to 5 years. You did your 5 years, and now you're back out on the street. Immediately, all of your rights that were stripped from you as a prisoner, as a 21st century slave, all right, should be restored to you. And that includes your Second Amendment rights. So even, you know, we had to pay attention to language, pay attention to where, is that right? Is that even constitutional to ban somebody from exercising their Second Amendment rights simply because they have been to prison, if they've done their time? And then you think about these criminals who facilitate mass murder all over the planet, like Hillary Clinton, like President Obama, CEO of USA Inc. Anyway, foreignpolicyjournal.com published this article, Hillary emails reveal true motive for Libya intervention. This is an article that was written by Brad Huff, published 2 days ago. They're not talking about this on mainstream media. These emails, 3,000 of them have been released, and now they have found over 1,200 classified emails on this woman's private server that when she says she didn't have any. Why isn't this mainstream media latching on to this? This should be big news. This is a major crime in terms of security and violating federal laws and statutes pertaining to the storage of classified information. This should, the DNC should immediately disqualify this woman. But she has shown that she's a willing soldier, a willing criminal, who is willing to do whatever it is that the people who are really in control of this system, all these politicians, are simply puppets, sock puppets. But she has shown there is no depravity that she will not sink to push the agenda of the wealthy, push the agenda of these corporations. The New Year's Eve's release of over 3,000 new Hillary Clinton emails from the State Department has CNN abuzz over gossipy text message the Who Gets to Ride with Hillary selection process set up by her staff and a How Cute Hillary photo fared on Facebook. But historians of the 2011 NATO war in Libya will be sure to notice a few of the truly explosive confirmations contained in the new emails: admissions of rebel war crimes, special op trainers inside Libya from nearly the start of the protests, Al-Qaeda embedded in the U.S.-backed opposition, and Western nations jockeying for access to Libyan oil. Now, I just read a article the other day about now Italy. It's Italy and another country. Italy, I think it could be Italy. I know it's Italy for one. I forget the other European country. But now they are moving in to militarily occupy Libya. The continuation of colonization. Okay? None of that is making your mainstream media news because they don't want you to know. The nefarious origins of the absurd Viagra mass rape claim and concern over Gaddafi's gold and silver reserves threatening European currency again. Marcus Garvey, some of his, you know, recordings, you can go to YouTube and watch him, but there was one where he was expressing some tough love towards Africa. And he was saying, how is it that all of these European nations have made themselves great and you remain on a bottom rung of the ladder when you have all of these resources, all this gold, all this silver, all this oil? They have metals that I learned that, you know, to like in avionics. What is avionics? Okay. When I was in the military, I got attached to a aviation unit. All right. My specialty was communications. Every unit has to have a communication specialist to set up communication networks in the field, right? But I was attached to an aviation maintenance unit. You know, some of my friends that was in the military, they, you know, worked on the electronics that control, you know, the systems inside of helicopters, you know, attack helicopters, the Cobras, the UH-1s, the military transport helicopters. There are certain components in avionics and in electronics, period, like for your laptop, for your cell phones. These minerals or metals are only found in certain parts of Africa. They're not found anywhere else in the world. Without these, planes don't fly. Electronics don't work. Okay? The mineral resources, the metal resources, the gold, the silver, the resources of Africa, there is no way in the hell that nobody in Africa should be wanting for anything. There shouldn't be no starving babies in Africa with bloated bellies and flies all over their faces. Shouldn't be none of that. There shouldn't be European corporations in control of mines in South Africa where when workers go on strike for higher pay, a living wage, that then the police and other military in South Africa, many of them blacks, then come and kill the workers for striking. None of that should be happening if the nations of Africa had true leadership. And when a true leader arises, such as a Mugabe, such as a Gaddafi, don't matter if Gaddafi was a Berber, don't matter if he ain't as melanated as some of us, the man was a Pan-Africanist. He was doing a lot of good in Africa. He created water. He created oases in the desert. He turned desert into farmland through his aqua projects and whatnot. Through him, he launched a satellite, okay, a communication satellite that provided cell phone service for people in Africa to where then they wouldn't have to rely on getting their service from European communication companies to operate their cell phones and whatnot. And then they're being charged all of these high prices, gouging the people. Gaddafi did that. But the most important thing that he proposed for Africa was the creation of an African, United African currency, just like the European Union has their currency called the Euro. He was proposing the same thing for Africa, but it would actually be backed by gold. That's why they took that man out and they told a lot of lies so that you would go along with the overthrow of a country that was not only doing a lot for the rest of Africa, all right, but was proposing something that would make the African economy the top economy in the world. That is the real reason they took him out, and they told all these lies so that you'll be like a Bernice King, you know, the daughter of Martin Luther King Jr. When she stood up there on the White House steps at that monument, I think it was the Lincoln Monument on the Washington Mall. And she sat talking about let freedom ring in Libya. While at that time when she said that, and she said that to back Obama decision to do this, she talking about let freedom ring. What happened was Libya was enslaved again through this action. They told all of those lies. Remember, they were talking about the death squads that was going. Well, the death squads were those Arab militias that was backed by the United States, backed by France, backed by Britain, backed by all those European nations, part of NATO. where they were hunting down Africans, killing them, slaughtering. The videos are on YouTube, people. They're on YouTube. Because a lot of Africans from other nations went to Libya to work on the many different projects that under the leadership of Gaddafi, Libya was involved in. And those Arabs in that country, those militias, started hunting them down and murdering them. Gaddafi wasn't hunting down Arabs, and he wasn't going to do it. He was going to put them in jail, which he should have never let them out of jail, because now look what happened. We're talking about terrorists. Libya was at the forefront of stopping terrorism in Africa. And it was for that reason that during the Bush administration, they normalized relationships with Libya, because he really was fighting terrorism. And then they promoted all these lies, talking about the Libyan army soldiers was using Viagra so that they could use rape as a weapon, and they going around raping it. It was a lot of rape going on, but it was by the U.S.-backed, the NATO-backed Arab militias that was going around raping and killing and pillaging. But in order to get you, the unconscious masses, to not protest in the street and say, keep your hands off of Libya, they floated all these lies out there to justify what they were doing. And this documents, this article really does. Let me read this excerpt. Black Libyans were commonly branded as foreign mercenaries by the rebel opposition for their perceived general loyalty to Gaddafi as a community, and they were subjected to torture, execution, and their towns liberated by ethnic cleansing. This is demonstrated in the most well-documented example of Tawerga, an entire town of 30,000 black and dark-skinned Libyans which vanished by August of 2011 after its takeover by NATO-backed NTC Misraton brigades. These attacks were well known as late as 2012, but President Obama, Susan Rice, Hillary Clinton, they ain't go on TV and say, oh, we must intervene and save all of these black people from these Islamic Arabs that are wiping out all these black people in Libya. We got to do something. No, we got to go in and stop. No, they didn't. Did they? Did y'all hear them? Did they go in to save these black people like they claimed they was going in to save the Arabs that were not being slaughtered by Gaddafi? Here's another excerpt. After Muammar Gaddafi was killed, hundreds of migrant workers from neighboring states were imprisoned by fighters allied to the new interim authorities. They accused the black Africans of having been mercenaries for the late ruler. Thousands of sub-Saharan Africans have been rounded up since Gaddafi fell in August. It appears that Clinton was getting personally briefed on the battlefield crimes of her beloved anti-Gaddafi fighters long before some of the worst of these genocidal crimes took place. They knew this. They knew this. They don't give a damn. Why would they give a damn? They practicing slavery against black people right here in America. So why would they care about all these black people being slaughtered? They had to take Gaddafi out in order to prop up the fraudulent American currency called, you know, the Federal Reserve notes, the dollar, which is why they went in and took out Saddam Hussein. Any so-called privileges or, you know, for the people who aren't poor, who aren't struggling and whatnot, you know, that making money off the economy, you doing that on the backs of the murder of people, all millions of people around this globe. But you just call it capitalism, right? That's what you call it. This is blood money. This is a blood economy. This is a slave-based economy. And he's and Hillary Clinton a racist. I don't suspect her of being a racist. I know the woman's a racist. We got her on video laughing once she got confirmation that these Arab dogs murdered Gaddafi. She was giggling like a little schoolgirl. Who does that? That's not even professional, number one. But it just showed that you have no soul, that you are evil, that you are a devil. I mean, she was cackling like a hen. And then she wants to quote Caesar. I think it was Caesar, one of them Roman people. That's who they try to emulate. They trying to rebuild the Roman Empire. That's what the U.S. models itself after. That's why you got Roman architecture all over Washington, D.C. The columns and stuff like that. This the second coming of the Roman Empire. A global empire. Tell you, man, I get upset when I read these things. Let me read this about the gold. The threat of Libya's oil and gold to French interests. Though the French proposed UN Security Council Resolution 1973 claimed the no-fly zone implemented over Libya was to protect civilians, an April 2011 email sent to Hillary with the subject line, "France client in Gaddafi's gold, tales of less noble ambitions." Why isn't this on mainstream news? Why, you know, they ain't having no more democratic debates, and so I wouldn't even trust Bernie Sanders to even bring this up. I certainly wouldn't expect the moderators to even ask these questions. Anderson Cooper, anybody out there interviewing President Obama, of course, they focused on the recent executive action pertaining to gun sales and whatnot. But this should be headline news if you was getting real news from these people. They're just an extension of the empire. They work for the state. The email identifies French President Nicolas Sarkozy as leading the attack on Libya with five specific purposes in mind. To obtain Libyan oil, that's the other one. The French and the Italians are the ones who are now moving in to occupy Libya. All right. So with five specific purposes in mind, to obtain Libyan oil, ensure French influence in the region, increase Sarkozy's reputation domestically, assert French military power, and to prevent Gaddafi's influence in what is considered Francophone Africa. Again, man, just like slavery was never abolished in the United States, colonialism has never been, end to colonialism has never been realized in Africa. What you see is proxies. These African leaders, they're proxies of the white supremacists that's in charge, the most powerful white supremacists on the planet. Most astounding is the lengthy section delineating the huge threat that Gaddafi's gold and silver reserves, estimated at 143 tons of gold and a similar amount in silver, posed to the French franc circulating as a prime African currency. See, in Africa, they ain't even got their own currency in many of these countries. In place of the noble sounding responsibility to protect doctrine fed to the public, there is this confidential explanation of what was really driving the war. See, this is even this confidential email being on her server is a crime. She violated protocol. But, you know, but again, that's not my main concern. My main concern is the human rights crimes that was committed against people in Africa. This is from the email. This gold was accumulated prior to the current rebellion and was intended to be used to establish a pan-African currency based on the Libyan golden dinar. This plan was designed to provide the Francophone African countries with an alternative to the French franc. He was looking to liberate those African countries under the control of France, because France ain't never gave up its colonies. And this was to help liberate them from Europeans, European colonization. According to knowledgeable individuals, this quantity of gold and silver is valued at more than $7 billion. French intelligence officers discovered this plan shortly after the current rebellion began, and this was one of the factors that influenced President Nicolas Sarkozy's decision to commit France to the attack on Libya. There is a whole lot more contained in this that I don't have time to get to. Again, I have linked to this. How is this not on CNN? How is this not being discussed on MSNBC? Why is this not on Fox News? Why isn't this on, you know, any of the corporate? Because they work for the state. There is no independent so-called media in this country. These are money-making operations made for controlled by corporations. They're not going to tell you the real truth behind these things, because then that will harm their interest, and justice is not in their interest. Truth is not in their interest. This is why it's so important that we fund true independent media. Let me move on to the next article. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on this because I don't have all the details about it. But the New York Daily News published an article today. It says an NYPD sergeant was stripped of her gun and shield Friday after she was brought up on departmental charges in the July 2014 chokehold death of Eric Garner, police said. See, I don't live in New York. This is not something I've studied. I don't know what does departmental charges mean. Does this mean that, you know, she's going to get a trial and this is going to be in a criminal court and she could possibly go to prison if convicted? I don't think so. I think all this means is she might lose her job, but I'm not sure. Sergeant Kizzy Adonis, and yes, I'm well aware of Kizzy being the name of an African slave in the movie Roots, but Sergeant Kizzy Adonis was placed on modified duty facing four counts of failure to supervise, according to a union official. The NYPD provided no details on the case against her. Adonis, a 14-year NYPD slave catcher, they didn't write that, I said that, was one of the supervising officers at the scene of Garner's death during his arrest 18 months ago for selling illegal loose cigarettes. Really, they should have said allegedly selling. He wasn't charged with a crime because he was dead. He didn't get a trial because he was dead. He was extrajudicially murdered for allegedly selling loose cigarettes, and New York wants to make sure it collects taxes, from the people. Adonis told investigators the perpetrator's condition did not seem serious and that he did not appear to get worse, according to an internal report by the NYPD. But Adonis also said that she believed she heard the perpetrator state that he was having difficulty breathing. Look, we all saw the video. We heard everything very clear. He was very adamant in his saying, "I can't breathe." This is why I say my allegiance is not to you based on your skin color. Because you melanated, you may even be darker than me. I'm a light-skinned brother, as they call. I'm red, you know. I'm a red bone, as they used to say in the hood and whatnot. And there are many people who are way darker than me. They look like they, you know, look like the brothers and sisters in Africa, but I don't consider them black. Because their allegiance ain't to the black community. Their allegiance is to the slave state. Their allegiance is to the slave catchers, the overseers, the white supremacists. And I'm sure that some people might, you know, I can see the same thing happening in the Cosby case. Let's forget about Eric Garner was a black victim who was murdered by these cops. She's black. She's black. So they ain't charged the white cops yet. They ain't charged them. So Let's start a campaign to free Kizzy. Let's free Kizzy, even though we all saw her participate in the murder of one of our brothers. Well, cause she black, you know, that's cause enough for me to come to her aid. That's not consciousness. Like Neely Fuller said, your skin color don't mean nothing if you don't believe in practicing justice. Waving the red, black, and green flag and saying that, you know, I'm a this and I'm a that, and recognizing my African roots, that don't matter if you don't practice justice. What'd he say? If you believe in mistreating people, you don't have no business breathing. That's what Neely Fuller said. That this ain't really about skin color. It's about injustice versus not, you know, justice. Now, skin color does, of course, play a role in it because black people are targeted the most. But I'm telling you, I have no sympathy for those who align themselves in these jobs with the state, with the slave catchers. You know, we were talking about slavery. That's what the topic of today's, you know, discussion with Mr. Kleeman was about. Practicing slavery through the exception clause of the 13th Amendment. Put somebody in slavery if you can convict them of a crime. What was Eric Garner's alleged crime? Hustling on the street, trying to provide for his family, allegedly selling loose cigarettes that New York State mad because they ain't get they cut. So, if they hadn't killed him, they was hoping to get a conviction so they can put them in slavery. And she's a slave catcher. She was a supervisor. She again, like I stated at the beginning of the program, she didn't say stop choking him. He said he can't breathe. She didn't say it don't take all of y'all piling on him. The man can't breathe. We got him surrounded. He can't run. He can't escape. Let me talk to this. You know, maybe he'll listen to me since I'm about the same skin tone as he is. She didn't go up to Eric Garner and say, listen, brother, I understand your concerns and whatnot. I know you're saying that you didn't do that. But look, these officers right here said that they saw you selling these loose cigarettes. Now, I don't want you to get hurt, but we got to take you in. You'll have your day in court. I just don't want nothing to happen to you, man. I don't want nothing to happen to you. Will you please just allow me, you know, I'll make sure that you're not hurt. Take you in, you know, get you, you know, you can go through the process. You can contact the lawyer and then you can, you know, fight it in court. I just don't want them to kill you, bro. You know, come on, man. It ain't worth it. It ain't worth it. She ain't try to talk them down, calm them down or nothing like that. She just stood by silently why they murdered this brother on the street. And I'm supposed to empathize with her now that she been charged by the NYPD for violating police procedure? Yes, the white men who actually killed them should be charged as well with criminal offenses, not just fired or something like that. Yes, we know the system of racism and white supremacy is real. But I'm not going to bet for someone who participated in the murder of Eric Garner simply because the white ones ain't been charged. We want them to be charged. We should be demanding that they be charged. But I'm not going to say free Kizzy. She put herself in this position the day that she's decided to become a slave catcher. The day that she decided to become a proxy racist tool of the system. So I have no sympathy whatsoever for her. And that's all I got to say about the matter. Proxy racism, they will throw you under the jail before they'll throw one of their own under the jail. They will get you before they'll get the other ones. They'll try to pin it all on you instead of the one who actually choked the man out, choked Eric Garner out. So proxy racism, you might enjoy them butter biscuits for some time, but a, you know, 14 years she was getting them butter biscuits. But now look, don't be a proxy racist. Listen, I want to thank James Kleeman for being our guest today to talk about I Am One of the Million. You can find them on the web at IamOneOfTheMillion.com. They put in their plank the removal of the exception clause of the 13th Amendment that allows for legalized slavery and human trafficking in the United States. I want to thank my assistant, Sister Cece, for setting up the interview. You know, your work is much valued. I really appreciate your help. And I also want to thank, and I'm going to make a point to do this every day, for those who donate to Black Talk Media Project, the North Carolina-based nonprofit media organization that manages Black Talk Radio Network. Without your financial support, none of this would be possible. So I appreciate your support and your faith in me and all of us who are part of the Black Talk Radio Network. Recognize the fact that you live behind the enemy lines of USA Inc., where they practice slavery and human trafficking as prescribed by the 13th Amendment. You need to develop battlefield awareness, battlefield skills, codification, so that you don't make it easy for them to make a casualty of you, to make a new slave of you in this 21st century. There's no guarantees that you can prevent it. Foolproof, there's no foolproof methods, none. But at least you can take, be proactive in at least making it more difficult for them to make a victim out of you. So with that said, peace and blessings to all. And I will be back on air Saturday night, 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern time, with another weekly edition of Political Prisoner Radio. Peace and blessings to all. Stay tuned for Tando Radio Show.
They just hope that he'll never wake up, because they never want to meet him on the battlefield.